Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new off-Broadway musical Joseph Smith and the Amazing Technicolor Underpants. Because Matt Stone and Trey Parker made Mad Bank Lampoon and Mormons in a play, why the hell shouldn't we? And now, The Scathing Atheist.
You know, it's a shame that a bill like this one I'm signing today is even required. Religious freedom does not mean freedom from religion.
Hey, I'm Remy G, and I run a Facebook page called Fuck Your Fucking God, You Ignorant, Blinded, Dumb Fuck. And I'm here to tell you we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
Thursday, it's June 27th, and sorry about all that money you pissed away accidentally expediting a binding legal ruling in favor of gay marriage, Mormons. I'm your host, No Illusions, and from Pizza Mecca, New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist. In this week's episode, we'll couch domestic abuse in a bunch of feel-good Jesus talk, a new poll will show that Americans are every bit as dumb as people think we are, and God will kill an enormous number of people. But first, the diatribe. At 13 years old, my brother gave me a copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and told me to read it. I was more of a climb trees, play sports, be sweaty, and grass stain kid than a sit still for more than 30 minutes and read stuff kid, but it was short, so I gave it a go. Now, this was the first time I'd ever seen religion treated with such brazen mockery. I was already doubting the conflicting messages from my Mormon dad and my Catholic mom, but when I read The Hitchhiker's Guide, I realized that it was okay to just call bullshit on all of it. After all, this dude wasn't getting struck by lightning or brimstone, and he certainly didn't seem to be too worried about going to hell, so why should I be? And there's a question that Adams poses in this book that's been stuck in my craw for 24 years. Just who is this God person anyway? You'd think that in 5,000 years of trying, the Abrahamic faiths would have come up with a concise definition, or if not concise, at least a consistent one. But as we all know, if you ask 20 Christians to define God, you'll get 20 different definitions. Sure, you'll get a few commonalities, but it'll be pretty clear pretty quickly that all these Christians are worshiping a different guy. And none of them, none of the Christians, none of the Jews, and none of the Muslims are worshiping the guy from the Bible. The all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving, moral, caring, forgiving, judicious, benevolent dude they talk about might make a cameo at some point, but he's nowhere to be found in the first four books. What's worse, the guys who wrote the first four books of the Bible, or more precisely, the guys who wrote the unrelated independent sources that would later be woven together to become the first four books of the Bible, also weren't working with a coherent definition. Is God the dude that shows up in the Garden of Eden in Genesis, or is he the guy that nobody can survive seeing from Exodus? Or is he the disembodied spirit they talk about in the Gospels? Is he the all-knowing guy from Jeremiah and Acts, or is he the bumbling idiot from Genesis and Numbers? Is he the hard-to-anger guy they sing about in Exodus, or is he the unjust, wrathful bully that was killing people for no reason right before they started singing about it? And if he's all-powerful, why does he need Moses to do everything? If he's all-loving, why is he such an asshole to virtually everyone he encounters? If he's all-knowing, why do people have to keep reminding him of shit? If he's moral, why does he champion slavery? If he's caring, why does Moses have to keep talking him out of killing people? If he's forgiving, why does he punish kids for their parents' crime? If he's judicious, why can't I find any Amalekites around these days? And if he's benevolent, why does he have so much fucking blood on his hands? Of course, these Christians that are so quick to define God don't know what the Bible says because they've never read it. If you press them, they'll often claim that they've read most of it, but then you start quizzing them and it turns out that they don't know there's a talking donkey in the fourth book. How much could you have possibly read? That's the fourth book. That's like saying I've seen most of the movie, but I missed the parts after the opening credits. If I believed a book to be inspired by the all-knowing creator of the universe, let alone directly revealed by him, I'd know the damn thing by heart. But these dingbats, even the literal words of the Bible, guys, can't be bothered to crack it open. And I don't think it's because they're too lazy either. I'm willing to bet that many, if not most of them, started it at some point. And I don't think they turned away because of the genealogies or the archaic language or the repetition or the bulk. I think they met their God and he scared the fuck out of them. I think they turned away because they started to realize that the more they knew about their religion, the harder it was going to be to believe.
They're talking about your Jesus.
Interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is my pan-racial color commentator, who's therefore allowed to say all the N-words, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to use otherwise offensive slurs in the proper satirical context whilst berating believers in the absurd?
Crack up, please. Let's get started. Which Confederate states are violating the First Amendment this week.
We'll get to that, but in our lead story tonight, recent polls show that 34% of Americans would vote for Jesus in 2016.
Another white guy?
Yeah, but he would be the first Jew. According to HuffPo columnist and author Fred Rich, a recent YouGov poll had more than a third of Americans answering yes to the question, would you favor establishing Christianity as the state religion, with the majority of those saying they would strongly favor such a move.
Wow. It's like polling plantation owners on their views about economic modalities in the southern colonies. De facto segregation ain't enough. We need to get this stuff on paper. Maybe we should make a grand public statement, a proclamation of emancipation. We'll work on the name. We'll work on the name.
So basically, a third of our country has seen how well theocracy's working in Saudi Arabia and want in on that action.
However, most of this group couldn't spell theocracy and therefore probably couldn't find Saudi Arabia on Google Maps.
Right. And as Rich points out in his column, this was a national poll, so the heathens in New England and California were skewing the numbers. Imagine what a poll like this looks like in just the stupid states. And speaking of the stupid states, our next story takes us to Kentucky, where Ken Ham seeks to rekindle the flagging attendance at his creationism museum by adding, wait for it, zip lines.
Seriously, this guy again? Zip lines?
After finding that dinosaurs and bullshit weren't enough to bring in the kiddies, Ham and his knowledge of boring cohorts have turned to the time-tested technique of completely unrelated touristy shit like zip lines.
I'm sure the conservative group within his ultra-conservative group are up in arms about this. It might not go over well with the physicists in the Christian Science Department, is what I'm saying. Aren't there several Bible passages that declare gravity an abomination or something like that? The Lord didn't say, let there be heavy. He said, let there be light.
To unveil this new attraction, he invited Kentucky State Representatives Kim King, Bart Rowland, Tim Moore, Tweedledee, and Foghorn Leghorn for the ribbon cutting, which probably involved safety scissors, or at least I would hope
so. Foghorn Leghorn with safety scissors?
Well, I say, I do declare this a zip line open. Representative King showed just how little she cared about definitions and shit when she posted on Facebook that the air quote museum was air quote educational.
These guys are awful at this. How hard is it to get attendance when nearly everyone in a 5-state radius is brainwashed from birth about the theme of their park? If Mickey Mouse was in the Bible, there would be mini Disney Worlds in every Walmart.
And from Mickey Mouse to Mecca Mouse, our next story takes us to the Middle East, where Dubai will see Kentucky's stupidity and raise them billions of dollars, because Dubai is fucking rolling. In a probably horribly misguided attempt to combat the nation's reputation of irreligion, the Dubai General Projects Department recently announced a Quran-based theme park that will, I'm sure, be every bit as fun as that sounds.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to the Ideologue Flume and the Twin Towers of Terror, maybe. I don't know what they'll come up with. Some clever names for their rides, I'm sure.
I believe that was our first 9/11 joke, sir. Well done.
Chalk it up.
Anyway, Dubai apparently has a Vegas of the Middle East reputation that prompted a popular Saudi cleric to order women not to visit the city because, you know how women are about succumbing to temptations of the flesh.
Yeah, how the women managed not to rape all those burqa-less men is beyond me. Unbelievable.
But Dubai officials hope they can counter this image by taking the one thing these rabid, undereducated, illiterate fundamentalists give a fuck about and treating it with the culture and sanctity we've come to expect from theme parks.
I think Islam is just angry as a whole. Not about Western domination or the Israeli Magic Act of 1948, but about being that third guy out that nobody really cares about, you know? They're like Chris Bosh, Graham Nash, the Green Party, all rolled up as a shitty little sad box called Worst Monotheists Ever. Yeah, nobody really likes.
Yeah, I guess I can't argue with you there. And from the Remind Me Why They Venerate the Murder Weapon Again file, the city of Evansville, Indiana has approved a public art exhibit that would contain no fewer than 2.5 dozen 8-foot crosses all over the city's waterfront.
Is this one of those avant-garde things where the public interacts with the art and they leave out hammer and nails, you know, see what happens? A social experiment type of thing.
I was wondering where you were going there. I wish. I
went straight to crucifixion.
Yeah. I can see that. Unfortunately, this is one of those run-of-the-mill, I love the Bible and the Constitution almost enough to read them things. Recognizing the constitutionally problematic nature of this project, the city insisted that the crosses not be overtly religious crosses.
Right, of course. I mean, this sounds like a perfectly secular homage to the lowercase letter T.
Well, City Attorney Ted Zeimer Jr. couldn't agree more, explaining the rock-solid legal authority of the city to violate the First Amendment by pointing out that the United Way was once allowed to put up statues in that very same spot.
So because Evansville, Indiana has a long, proud history of violating the First Amendment, they're claiming squatters' rights to ignore the Bill of Rights? Is that really what they're saying?
No, no. They're saying that these are just statues. You see, Zimmer went on to explain that, quote, we told them they couldn't have any writing of any kind on them, so they're statues. They might be religious symbols to someone, or they might be attractive statues to someone else.
Yeah, without the word Jesus actually written on them, they're just an interesting demonstration of perpendicularity. It's a study of that sort of thing. If it ain't a right-wing angle, it's a wrong-wing angle.
And moving on to our final story of the night. 2 weeks ago, we talked about a Christian who was obsessed with men spanking their monkeys. This week, we'll turn to some Christians that are obsessed with men spanking their wives.
Wonderful. I'll keep saying this until it starts happening. How is it every women's group not also an outspoken atheist group?
Well, maybe this will help.
Sure hope so.
The Christian Domestic Discipline Movement website goes to great lengths to explain that they're not a fetish site, so stop asking, damn it. They're not interested in the type of spanking that both of the people involved enjoy, because that's satanic. They're interested in the type of spanking where men physically abuse their wives until they do as they're told, but only if it's consensual, of course.
Right, right, of course, because biblically, the women you marry and the blacks you own are entitled to similar privileges. Except the blacks aren't guaranteed the consensual part. And really, neither are the women.
Yeah, God doesn't do consensual very well.
No, he doesn't. We should get down there and hand out some atheist-themed rape whistles or something. Maybe set up some women's crisis centers called Planned Penetration. Probably wouldn't get bombed by evangelicals.
Probably not.
Right.
Anyway, the CDD lifestyle also advocates other forms of infantilization and punishments like timeouts, writing sentences like, I won't disobey my master, and being humbled by, quote, some sort of nude humiliation.
Wow.
But, and I can't state this enough, this isn't about being an abusive, misogynistic, felonious, psychopathic, cowardly, demonic piece of shit that should have his head drilled open and his cerebrospinal fluid sucked out by a poisonous leech wrapped in barbed wire, because Jesus. And on that mental image, we'll close out the headlines tonight. Heath, thanks again for joining me.
Had a great time.
And when we come back, Lucinda will join us to regret suggesting we all read the Bible. All right, I'll admit that Numbers was a hell of a lot harder to write a poem about than the other three books, but I wrote one anyway. Here it goes. Numbers in rhyme. How many soldiers? How many did Moses have? And who gives a fuck? It's time once again for the Atheist Calendar portion of the show. This is the now monthly portion of the show we set aside to talk up some of the atheist, skeptical, and otherwise secular events going on around the country and around the world, only this time just around the country. On the weekend of July 4th, and for our international listeners, July 4th is the day that Americans celebrate the 4th of July, the Skeptics will be taking over the Science and Skepticism track at Convergence in Minneapolis. Not sure about the rest of the conference, but the Skeptic part looks awesome. Rebecca Watson and her team of skeptical female superheroes team up with PZ Myers, which would make an awesome conference and an even more awesome comic book. Of course, the big one's gearing up on the 11th in Vegas. It's called The Amazing Meeting, and if you're listening to this podcast, you've heard of it. So all I'm going to say is if you register before the 1st of July, it's $125 cheaper. But if Vegas is there and you're here, perhaps you can make it to the SSA East, the other half of the Secular Student Alliance's bi-coastal conference extravaganza this year, except for that it's in Columbus, Ohio, which certainly isn't coastal. But if you're secular and you're a student, it starts on the 12th, runs through the weekend, looks like a lot of fun. And finally, I wanted to toss out a plug for the CFI's upcoming leadership conference in Amherst, New York, on the weekend of the 25th of July. If you're a student and you have any plans or aspirations to start a skeptical, secular, or free thought group on campus, CFI is a phenomenal resource. You'll find more details about this conference and all the other events I just outlined on the show notes for this episode at scathingatheist.com. This just in, I was only fucking with you. I did write a poem about numbers. Here it goes. One is the number of gods, and he gives two shits about who gets killed and who lives. Three times Balaam and his donkey have spats before God starts talking out that Midianite's ass. Five chapters in, things get scary for chicks. Six stuff's prescribed if they're getting side dick, and seven's for resting unless you need stones to break some stick-gathering heathen's skull in his bones. Eight, too much mana? Should you voice your critiques, God'll plague you and kill you, but he'll send quail for weeks. Then that asinine bastard might invoke some damn clause to show you what a tenuous promise that promised land was. 11 tribes conscribe all their fighting-age men, but the 12th tribe, the Levites, just carry the tent. 20 is war age, but like most things you'll notice, the tribe that's exempt is the one that has Moses. 30 Sunday's morning when God kills Aaron on high, then 40 years waiting for all the bad Jews to die. 50% of the book we spend bored counting Jews and the booty they offer the Lord. We get a couple of censuses from all of the tribes. Enumerated offerings are in detail described. As the name would suggest, the book's obsessed with amounts, but no number gets higher than God's body count. We could start with the animals, who are killed by the score each time the tabernacle opens its door. Bulls, rams, and donkeys, pigeons, and sheep, and a pile of quail about 3 cubits deep. Israelites, oh yeah, he kills them by the thousands. He opens the earth, and he swallows their houses. He burns their encampments, sends serpents and plagues, and what heinous encroachments elicit God's rage? Being hungry or thirsty. Doubting Moses' clout, going to the tabernacle once the candles are out, being honest about scouting, gathering sticks, complaining to Moses and acting like dicks, whoring with Moabites, lighting incense all wrong, being treated like shit and not just going along, thinking manna tastes nasty, being slow to obey, or living in cities that stand in his way. But it isn't like God is always a villain. When he orders Moses to murder all the Midianite children, he says if they're virgins, and if they behave, he can spare the young women and keep them as slaves.
The Holy Babel.
The Book of Numbers rests between two of the most notorious books in the Bible, and perhaps because of that, it doesn't get as much attention as Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And sure, Numbers doesn't have the homophobic flair of Leviticus or the thank God the Pentateuch is over satisfaction of Deuteronomy, but if you were to insert it into any other book ever written, Numbers would almost certainly be the most fucked up portion of that book. But mostly it's just a horribly boring book that details one leg of the trip from Sinai to the Promised Land, punctuated with moments of brutal insanity that might just be there to keep you awake. Joining Heath and me to discuss this strange little hybrid of bookkeeping and genocide is my beautiful wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
Hi, Noah. I'd say I'm happy to be here and all, but after reading Numbers, I don't really think God would want me saying anything without your permission. So I'm just going to say hi.
Yeah, this is probably the most sexist book we've come across yet, and we'll get to all of that. But first things first, if the Jews are going to take over the Holy Land, they're going to need an army.
Right, of course. So we start with the original Schindler's Enlistment. Then we lay out the structure for the Judaism pyramid scheme, or tetrahedron. Somebody has to start the game with all the reds and oranges, plus all four railroads.
And on top of that, none of the people in Moses' tribe have to join the army, and when they camp in the wilderness, they get to set their tents up smack in the middle of the other 11 tribes that are armed.
Well, would you want rabbis in the front lines of your army? No, you want badass Israeli commando-type Jews, like Adam Sandler, not pale, bearded, shitty drivers that started the Crown Heights riots by running over a black pedestrian.
Oh.
And, of course, God's going to need some money to go with this army.
Right, so in Chapter 3, Aaron loses about 1,365 shekels in a card game and sets up the most ridiculous, elaborate, nonsensical story to get the money back from his flock of ancient nomadic tribes that apparently all carry reasonable amounts of fungible hard currency at all times. Weird. So technically, 273 extra babies that should have been righteously murdered...
Which sounds a lot like an endorsement for abortion to me.
No. It's not abortion right after birth. That's just righteous murder in this case. What had happened is, God was going to kill all your kids, but me and my family of 22,000 agreed to live a life of purported divine privilege in exchange for saving them. But you all had 22,273 firstborn children.
Whoops.
So God's going to need 5 shekels apiece for the accounting discrepancy. Us Levites will collect the cash here and write God a post-dated check. It'll be fine.
Then we get God's overly elaborate tabernacle relocation strategy. Basically, he spends Chapter 4 channeling a foul-tempered old lady with Alzheimer's bitching at the moving guys. I said, wrap it in blue cloth. No, I want the Gershonites to carry the curtains, I said. Hey, careful with those lamps or I'll incinerate you with fireballs, young man. And then we get started with the sexism.
Oh, yes.
In Chapter 5, we learn how to tell whether your wife has been fucking the goat milkman using nothing more than dirty water, a handful of flour, and fucking misogyny.
The old grain offering dirty water miscarriage trick. Everybody's heard of that one. Seems like this is just a way for dudes to save face when they had a slutty wife, doesn't it? Having her drink dirty water might make her sick, but I'm fairly certain it's never led to an instantaneous immaculate hysterectomy. So every time they do the ceremony, the dude doesn't look like an asshole because his wife's womb doesn't fall out on the spot, fucking obviously.
Yeah, I was expecting them to break out a skill and a duck at any moment.
Good Monty Python. Good Monty Python. Hold on.
And then we get the rules for the vow of the Nazarites, which is spelled Nazi rites. Kind of fucks you up in the middle of a Jew book.
Ironically.
Chapter 7, God shamelessly ups the word count by spelling out the exact same 90-word sacrifice 12 fucking times. The Levites shave all their hair and pubes. And in Chapter 9, we learn that God's a cloud. Don't forget Passover's coming up. Then he adds a brass section, and they're ready to go conquer the promised land.
Hold on here. If I'm being a stickler, God should have asked for brass plated with silver if he wanted a fuller timbre for those trumpets. Nobody's perfect,
though.
And moving on to Chapter 11, as soon as they hit the road, the Jews start bitching because they don't like manna and they want some meat.
Couldn't God have solved the meat shortage by not demanding so many damn sacrifices?
Sure, but I guess this was supposed to be some grand punishment for not appreciating the Triscuit rain. It's not too impressive. Hey, do you guys have a 3-foot-tall pile of quail in your yard? Okay, I guess since we're nomadic, we just eat a bunch now. Maybe not so much that the quail actually oozes out of my nostrils, literally, but a lot. We eat a lot now, and then start heading towards the next place on Moses' shitty desert obstacle course, I guess.
What the fuck were they trying to say there? Were the angels going to force feed their asses like Kevin Spacey's character in Seven?
And God was like, shit, yeah, that doesn't smite them much at all. And plague. I said the quail thing and plague. Nobody heard me, but I said and plague at the end as they trailed off. And plague.
And in Chapter 12, Aaron and his wife talk shit about Moses, so God makes her a leper for a week.
Right, and when Moses asks God to go easy on her so she doesn't turn out like a stillborn baby with its flesh half eaten off, he justifies making her skin rot off by saying if her father spit in her face, would she not be shamed for 7 days? Oh, well, when you put it that way.
Oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Make this shit up. So next we meet 00 Shiva scouting out the promised land, and they say that all the people already living there are too strong for all the quail-engorged Israelites to displace. So God throws one of his patented temper tantrums and kills pretty much everybody for bitching too much. He curses their children, he sends a plague, he marched an army out to die. Standard operating procedure.
And as if that's not enough, he unpromises them the promised land.
Yeah, it's part of the act where the hypnotist removes all the free-thinking non-sheep from the stage, leaving only the blindly faithful idiots who are truly qualified to run the future of Judaism. Chapter 15, right in the middle of some proper goat-killing etiquette, we learn that Moses and the gang find a guy picking up sticks on the Sabbath, so, of course, God commands them to stone him to death.
Of course.
We don't even have to make this shit up. And then, like a whiplash-inducing subject change, in the next verse after the stoning, God reminds everybody that he likes fringes on the outfits. So don't forget to add the fringes.
So seriously, it may sound somewhat contradictory, but no faggots on Saturday, and tassels for everyone! Also, lest you forget, I'm fucking God, so listen to this shit.
And then we get this weird little mutiny. Some other Levites challenge Moses' leadership, so he challenges them to an incense-burning match to the death.
Take out your censers, bitches. I'll fucking outsmoke anyone. Throw down.
You light incense like Michael J. Fox on a meth binge. You call that a grain offering? I got more fiber in my stools.
Oh, so God goes fucking nuts, right? He opens up the earth to swallow whole families along with their slaves and furnishings. He burns 250 people alive, and then he kills 14,000 more with a plague. Anyway, just in case the house-swallowing, fireball-chucking, plague-sending message wasn't clear enough, God also has Moses write everybody's name on a stick, and then only Aaron's stick grows flowers for whatever reason. In chapter 18, we reinforce the priest get all the best shit motif, and then in 19, we kill cows and we don't touch dead people.
Okay, chapter 20, God kills Moses' brother, and in the serial killer fashion I've learned to expect from deities, especially Old Testament God, he doesn't just plain murder Aaron. He makes his son watch his naked father die on the fucking mountain and then walk back down the mountain wearing his murdered father's clothes.
Classy.
The fuck?
Then God continues to be an asshole and sends a bunch of poisonous serpents to kill the Jews to stop him from bitching. And then finally Moses goes on the war path and starts killing some motherfuckers. And then apparently in chapter 22 there was some kind of biblical writer's strike, so they had the folks from Disney step in for a few chapters. Because all of a sudden, everybody's like breaking into song, and there's a talking donkey.
And didn't Balaam, or whatever the fuck his name is, seem strangely nonplussed by this?
Well, in fairness, he thought he was speaking to God earlier. So talking to a donkey who sounds like Eddie Murphy is far more plausible in this situation.
Grant.
So basically the story here is that Balak, I guess, is trying to get Balaam, I guess, to go to war against the Israelites, but Balaam knows that God's on their side, so he spends a couple of chapters refusing in song. Then we get another census, because holy shit, it's been almost 22 chapters since we counted all the Jews.
Well, God had killed a lot of them since then.
True, so. Yeah.
Moving on to chapter 30, we learn the difference between man's vows, which must be kept, and women's vows must be kept unless a man says so.
Yeah, just in case the whole women are inferior to men thing wasn't clear by now, God hammers it home one more time for us.
Right, then they go on to war with the Midianites and slaughter them. All the men of fighting age are killed. And Moses is furious because they failed to kill the women and children.
Oh,
I'm not getting God to divinely inspire our army for you guys to not fully murder, pillage, and rape everyone. I've got to be a stickler on this one or my boss yells at me and he's always watching. You either murder them or you rape them or both in either order. Understood?
Then thanks to the cattle rustling Reubenites and Gadites, Jews start a long and storied tradition of building settlements in other people's land. Then we get a chapter that rehashes every spot where they camped for the last 40 fucking years.
Riveting.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they divvy up the promised land before they actually possess it, of course. God takes a minute to spell out exactly what is and isn't murder. And then they finish it all out with a soft close concerning inheritances and marriage.
So what do we learn in Numbers? We learn, first of all, that God's a wrathful, vengeful, aberrant, petty tyrant.
Well, we relearn that, I suppose.
We learn that women are worthless.
We learn that donkeys can talk. We learn that genocide is A-OK.
And we learn that anybody who read the first four books of the Bible and didn't come out the other side an atheist needs to work on their reading comprehension skills.
Amen.
So Heath, Lucinda, thanks for suffering through this with me once again.
Fantastic time.
No,
always.
It wasn't. Before we shut off the lights tonight, I want to respond to a slight criticism recently posted in an otherwise extremely complimentary review. Mr. Something Clever About God appreciates the toilet humor, the 30-minute format, and the overall production quality, but offers the following critique. The commentary is more witty than laugh-out-loud funny, so Heath and Noah could use more snickers and less belly laughs. First of all, thanks for the rating, but I do want to take issue with that minor objection. Every laugh you hear on this show is genuine, and Heath and I would never pretend to laugh at one another's material, and we certainly wouldn't laugh at jokes that we wrote for the other guy, and we certainly wouldn't cut and paste genuine laughs from one place and drop them into another place in the audio later, and I'm certainly not lying right now, and it's certainly not obvious. We also need to take a few seconds to recognize this week's most vivacious, tenacious, loquacious, sagacious, perspicacious, papillionacious, gracious, curvaceous, and hellacious people, Benjamin and David. They prove themselves worthy of the kind of praise that can only be fully expressed by Googling words that end in A-C-I-O-U-S, removing the insulting ones, then adding a really obscure term for butterfly-like, by giving us money. Only the most intelligent and sexually virile specimens of human excellence have what it takes to give us money, but if you think you can live up to my verbose laudations, you'll find the donate button at the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you love the show but you lost all your money betting on SCOTUS outcomes, you can still help out by telling a friend about the show or leaving us a glowing 5-star review on iTunes. I should point out that as of this recording, we have 68 reviews, so there's still time to be the sexually significant 69th reviewer if you're into that sort of thing. I also need to thank Heath and Lucinda for joining me tonight, and Remy G. for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. This is normally the part where I tell you you should check out his awesome Facebook page called Fuck Your Fucking God, You Ignorant, Blinded, Dumb Fuck, which totally makes this podcast sound PG and has an awesome avatar of a nude Jesus giving you this, hey baby, I've got enough orifices for everybody kind of look. But I can't, because Facebook is run by a bunch of cowardly pube-waxing assholes who took down his page because religious people have fragile feelings and his words made them cry. So since they won't let him say it, I'll say it. Hey, religious assholes on Facebook, fuck your fucking God, you ignorant, blinded, dumb fuck. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you this week, but we'll be back in 168 hours with more. If you can't wait that long, you can always check out our erratically published blog and like/subscribe/follow us on Facebook/YouTube/Twitter. You can also find our archives at scathingatheist.com, or you can help bump up our Stitcher ranking by downloading the Stitcher app and listening to us there. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
So are we going to just keep going then? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's back in our
Well, regardless of our editing decisions,
right,
God's going to continue to not exist. We'll be right either way.
Right. Exactly. That's the important shit.